You're listening to A Woman's World. I'm Purvi Shah, and I have here with me today writer and author Rajika Bhandari. So, Rajika, we were just talking a little bit about the difference that place makes and the ways in which your book was launched here in New York City and in Delhi. I'd love to hear a little bit more about what maybe some of the surprising reactions might have been. It seems like a lot of the reactions that you've gotten have been very similar in terms of sharing stories, but were there any reactions that surprised you?
I think one of the really interesting things has been to see how this book has been viewed, because it intersects across many different areas. There's travel, there's history, there's architecture and design in there. So it's not a book that fits easily into any one genre or slot, if you will. And it's been very interesting that back in India, where the book has been published, it's been viewed primarily as a travel book.
Interesting.
And that to me was exciting and a bit of a surprise. I had thought it would be sort of seen more as almost historical nonfiction, for which there's been a growing audience in India. But really, it's being seen more as a travel book, because despite the historical components. So I think that's been really interesting. And I've also been pleasantly surprised that it's got a very good reception, because this was just an idea that I sort of came up with. I had no idea what sort of interest or an audience this would have. I was lucky that Roli Books, my publisher, decided to take a chance on it. And there was really no way to know whether people would be interested in this topic. So it's been great that there's been a lot of interest. We've had some wonderful reviews in India, about 8 to 10 reviews in all of the major magazines and papers. It's led to some other very exciting writing assignments. I'm here doing this show with you today. So it's been great.
That's fantastic. I'd love to, I mean, I think in your first point, it's interesting what you're saying about it being perceived mostly as a travel narrative. And I wonder if your work as a researcher, or what you do in terms of your work in international education, had an influence in terms of you seeing it in a kind of broader landscape or not. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, definitely. I think it took a while for me to fully see how the two connected, because for a while I kept feeling like these are these two very separate sides of who I am, and almost a split personality or a dual personality, if you will, because by day I am a researcher in international higher education, and then I write on the side. But the more I thought about it, I saw that there was a real connection, because international education is also really about opening your minds to the world, opening up to the world, learning about the world through movement, through travel. It's a different kind of travel, but it is a very important and transformative kind of travel nonetheless. And many of us have been through that experience. It was international education, or the idea of pursuing a higher education overseas, that brought me to the US, and that actually brings almost 800,000 students to the US every year.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yes, the numbers are large. So we're really talking of a very large migration for the purpose
of some countries around the world or more, right?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, some countries are definitely much more active in this than others. And the U.S. receives most students from around the world. And globally, if we look at this as sort of a phenomenon of migration, currently there are over 4 million students every year who move around the world to seek a higher education. So there's a lot of mobility and movement going on here, and for different purposes, though, than just sort of more recreational travel. But that's sort of one major connection for me. And also the other connection has been that over the past 6 or 7 years, through my work in international education, I've been able to really travel all over the globe and meet some amazing people and have some amazing experiences. And so for me, in a real sense, it's really opened worlds and doors to me in a way that might not have happened otherwise.
So outside India, where's the favorite place that you've gotten to travel to?
I've traveled to many, many different places, and I think touched almost all continents. But I would have to say that one of my favorites is actually very close to home in the U.S. I love Mexico. I've not the just the touristy Mexico of
Cancun all the time,
which I actually have not visited. I have not been to Cancun, but I've traveled a lot across Mexico, and there's just something about the people, the culture, where I think Indians and Mexicans have a real affinity for each other. And
it's the roti tortilla connection.
That could be it. That could be it. But I think it goes much further back. It's been fascinating to me that when you look even at some Mexican crafts and handicrafts, if you were to put them side by side, actually this is true of other South American and Latin American crafts, that if you put them side by side with, for example, our Indian handicrafts from the Northeast, you really couldn't tell the difference. And it's amazing to me that also in some of sort of the folk tales and celebrations, there are all these similarities on how good and evil is represented in folk art, and just these amazing overlaps. And so I love Mexico. I've been there several times. So I would say that from all the places I've visited, that remains my favorite.
That sounds great, especially given our interminable winter right now. It sounds like it would be perfect to get to. So I noticed when you were talking about your writing, you know, you talked about writing on the side, which is so fascinating, right? Because you have a book out, and I mean, for your work, you have some texts out as well, right? So it seems like writing is so much a part of your life. But why do you feel like it's on the side?
Yeah, writing is a large part of what I do. Through my work, my day job, I've written 4 books and then published several articles. And yes, writing is a large part of what I do, even during the day. But this other kind of writing is, I say on the side, because I'm also a mother, and I have a small 3.5-year-old.
Yay!
So the on the side really means during nap time on weekends, or late at night. And so I think that's the biggest challenge in terms of carving out time.
Yeah. So tell me about your journey becoming a mother. What was that like?
Well, it's been an amazing 3.5 wonderful yet completely chaotic years.
I think every parent would say that, right?
Every parent would say that, yes, absolutely.
And those who don't are lying.
I fully agree with that. And I actually firmly believe that no matter how many parenting books or self-help books you read, nothing quite prepares you for the journey, and it's really a rite of passage. And even your best friends will not tell you how bad the sleep how bad the sleep deprivation is in the first year or so, because I think they want people to join their ranks,
right? To go through initiation.
Absolutely.
It's like a hazing of some sort.
Absolutely. So it's been terrific. I don't regret it for a second. And it just gives a whole new meaning to the term time management.
Yeah. So when you think about your writing, do you approach it differently, given that, you know, as you say, you're carving out time and nap time or late at night, you know? And when you started The Raj on the Move, you didn't have a child to think about, you know, so your time must have felt very different. But so has this new sense of time shaped what you're thinking about in terms of projects now moving forward?
I think it definitely has, because I think it teaches you to think in shorter spans of time and in terms of shorter pieces, which might eventually, of course, lead to a book-length work. But I think it teaches you to be more realistic about what really are the chunks of time that you have, and what can you produce or deliver during that time. I think the other way in which it's changed my writing is, and again, a lot of these are on my website. The other topic I really like to dwell on and write about are parenting issues, and especially the connection between single parenting and then also how it connects with culture. So over the past year or so, a lot of the posts on my blog posts on my website, which are sort of more like standalone columns almost, have been around issues of parenting and culture. Like one of them was about being a parent in a different culture and raising your child in a different culture, and really thinking about how do you pass on the sense of tradition and culture to your child. And Purvi, we were talking earlier about Holi versus Easter, and I was telling you about how this weekend I'm going to take my daughter to a big event that's in where there's going to be an Easter egg hunt, but on the other hand, I've chosen to not take her to a big Holi bash that's happening in Manhattan. So sort of the choices that we make as parents of children or a child in my case who's being raised as an Indian American.
So interesting. So in what ways do you feel like you try to keep that thread of culture going? Or what are some of the strategies you come up with to, because it seems like it's important to you to have that for your daughter. So what are some of the ways in which you try to make that happen?
I think some of it is definitely around festivals. So Zoya did get to celebrate Holi yesterday with a whole group of her friends.
That's
even
so
though
great.
I couldn't be there because it was during the day. We celebrate Diwali, but it's not just in the sense of sort of the cultural event, but also some of the social traditions or values that surround that. So this notion of have on Diwali, opening up your home to friends and family, having everyone over, and that what that sort of means in the sense of building a community around you. And also in terms of just other values that, you know, we've grown up with in India, but also recognizing where you sort of need to let go of those, because you are raising your child in a different country and a different culture. But it's challenging. I think what I found to be the most challenging is language, on how to raise a bilingual child. So that's something I think a lot about these days, and that I talk to other parents about who come from an immigrant background. Because I think for those of us who've grown up in India, being truly bilingual and being equally comfortable in English and another Indian language, it is very challenging to really surround your child or immerse them in a language different from English, and do it sufficiently in a way where they will actually pick it up enough to be able to converse in it. So for me, that's the big challenge these days, that how do I pass on the language? Because I think for Indian immigrants who are also fluent English speakers, that's the part of our cultural heritage that dies the fastest.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And that is so much the piece which feels like a real connection, right, to the homeland in some ways, you know, that you can understand even the unsaid when you speak a language in a different way. Do you ever imagine Zoya reading your writing at some point and, you know, having her perspective on it. Does that ever come into your head?
Yes, absolutely. And the perspective that I often think about is, should I be censoring myself? And of course, there are many writers who, you know, dwelt on this issue, or many writers who are also parents who've examined this issue of should you or should you not censor your yourself, and how would you feel when your child is 12 years old and opens up one of your books and says, you wrote that? So I think that's always a thought. But also really sort of exposing her to the world of writing and literature. And I think for me recently, one of the most exciting experiences, or really sort of coming or fully accepting this other part of me as sort of the writer and author, was when Zoya's preschool class had parents come in different weeks and talk about what they do. So here I was thinking about, what am I going to tell a group of three-year-olds about what I do?
That's
I can't
amazing.
Talk to them about being a researcher and working with data. They're never going to understand that, and they'll be asleep in a minute. So I decided to talk about being a writer.
Yeah.
And so that was really sort of the first time that I think I fully embraced that identity. And Zoya was very excited, where she was running around for a whole week saying, my mom's a writer, and she's going to come talk to her class about being a writer. So in her mind, that's how she sees me now. So
that's so great. I love that, especially because, you know, as you say, writing is so hard and the publishing process is so difficult, and especially in our market these days. But, you know, it's great when you have that moment where you really are heard. And, you know, even when your daughter says that, that's amazing. It's brilliant. So I think you have more. I'd love to hear actually where folks can get your book if they wanted to take a look, and if you have other events coming up that people can go to here.
Yeah, absolutely. The book is currently available in India at all major bookstores and through a lot of websites, which you can also access from here. So it's on Flipkart.com. It's on Landmark.com. And Flipkart is great for getting books from India. It's also going to be on Amazon very soon as an ebook. So stay tuned for that. And again, my website is rajikainc.com. And I'll be announcing that on the website as soon as the book is available on Amazon. We also have a very exciting second book event coming up right here in New York on Tuesday, April 23rd. It's being organized by my organization that I work for, the Institute of International Education. The details are all going to be on my website. And again, it's April 23rd at 5:30 in the evening. And it's going to be very exciting. I'll be talking about my book and reading from it. I'll be sharing some photos, and we'll also be in conversation with Vibhuti Patel, who writes for The Wall Street Journal and has been with Newsweek International and writes on arts and culture issues.
That sounds great. And I love it because, you know, we've been talking through this conversation about the different facets of your life, and it seems like they're all coming together in this moment, which is really beautiful. So thank you so much, Rajika, for being on. It's been great to hear about your writing journey and, you know, just the ways in which you've learned and grown through this experience, too. Thank you all for tuning in and joining us for A Woman's World. I look forward to connecting with each of you again very soon.